You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire. Smoke. Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
It is Thursday, April 27th, 2017, Draft Day, here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Alongside the King, Scott Angle, the Fantasy Executive, Corey Parson, and Matt Modica, I am Greg Sussman. Corey, Merry Christmas, my friend.
Yes, it is. This is a high holy day in fantasy sports, Christmas of sorts. This time tonight, the presents will be under the table, and we can get ready to get started. We'll start the process of getting rosters filled out, and then on Saturday, we draft for the first time. So this is starting to get very exciting. As you can tell by my voice, I'm excited. I'm sitting in here. I'm about to take my damn shirt off and broadcast, you know, with my chest out. It may get uncomfortable in the studio today if I have to take my shirt off, Scotty. And if I take my shirt off, don't touch me. Because if you touch, you tip.
Well, look, first off, I have money. And second off, you know, with the size of your belly, I'm going to inadvertently get touched anyway. Good morning.
Don't worry about my belly. All right? You hear my maiden call, Scott?
Feed me.
How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing okay.
Greg, you look uncomfortable.
It's very hot in here.
Yes, it is. The skeleton is naked.
We all should be like Jeff.
Yeah, I'm jealous of Jeff too. Jeff is slender too. Look at that.
Yeah, Jeff's feeling
but
good.
But Jeff don't have no.
Why is he called Jeff?
That's his name. His name is Jeff.
His name.
It's Jeff the skeleton.
Why are you confused?
Why was his name? I'm just interested in why you called him Jeff. That's
his name.
All.
You got a name. Your name is Scott. His name is Jeff.
Right. Well, how did you come up with Jeff?
His name. He walked in here and said, "Hi, I'm Jeff."
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't realize he talked to.
You haven't seen the commercial?
Have you watched the commercial?
What?
The Inside Injuries commercial.
It's on our network here.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
I'll show it to you.
Okay. He talks. His name is Jeff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to start with the draft today, gentlemen. We have a bunch of things, of course, baseball, Eric themes, including a little Clayton Kershaw news. Just like,
Oh, what happened to Clayton Kershaw?
His thigh is bothering him.
Oh, his thigh?
Yeah, he says he'll be okay, though.
He can get a massage.
I'm sure he will. Cody Glover, I just woke up. What the hell is this?
He had a save?
No, he
went on the DL.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They say he's only going to miss the 10 days, though, so when... You know, but it's not going to be Blake Treinen, you know, after he gave up another run last night.
Let's start with football, because Bob McGinn is the guy that, like, does all these, like, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel polls, like, who do you think the best quarterback is, wide receiver, all those polls, right? And he only comes up with one mock draft a year. He's not like Mel Kiper or Mick Shea or any of these other guys that do a million of them, right?
He's like someone that's on ESPN. What's his name?
Which one?
The dude that did a horrible job of predicting the election. What's his name?
Oh, Nate Silver.
Yeah, Nate Silver. He's like Nate Silver, right?
Nate Silver will tell you he did a wonderful job predicting the election. I'm not kidding. I actually had this conversation yesterday because he was the closest, so he says. Even though it was 75%, 25%, whatever.
Yeah.
This is not the point of the story.
No.
Anyway, Paul McGinn does one mock draft a year. There's all the information. They think he's one of the more accurate guys there are. Bob McGinn had Mitch Trubisky going number one overall.
That's horrific.
Now, I have said repeatedly that I believe that is a smokescreen with Trubisky, that it's Myles Garrett number one, that this isn't even a thing. We're not going to make it a thing. But when he says it, people notice. Modica, I'm noticing now.
Yeah, I was actually reading this yesterday. And then this morning, a little girl woke me up to let me know at 3:30 that she went to the bathroom. So at 4 a.m. this morning on the NFL Network, I watched Mike Mayock's draft special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these are very different from what I saw from Bob McGinn.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I saw a great tweet earlier. I think it might have been Connor Orr that put it out there. It's basically like, if Bob McGinn says it, you have to notice. It's not necessarily right, obviously. But it's something that you're going to have to notice. And could it begin the anarchy of the game? I mean, if Trubisky goes first, no one has any idea what's going to happen. Like, then you does Myles Garrett go to San Francisco? You would think so, but who the hell knows? I mean, Scott, this is what makes draft day so fun. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah, you never know what trades are going to happen, et cetera. I'd say, personally, I don't even like Trubisky the first out of all the quarterbacks. So
you with me, right? Watson.
I like Mahomes too. I like Mahomes. Okay, you know, he might have to adjust to a pro style offense, but I like Mahomes. He's dynamic.
Why don't they bring that air raid offense to the NFL?
Like, just put Mike Leach in charge of something and just let him run the world.
I think the air raid offense, it'd be interesting in the NFL.
I'm kind of interested too. Yeah, to be honest with you. We'll talk more NFL draft throughout the morning. A bunch of baseball too. Guys, this is the Roto Experts in the morning. It is draft day. It is scorching hot in here. We'll be right back right after this. So, according to Bob McGinn, this Mitchell Trubisky's thing, it's not a smokescreen. It's real. That the Browns are legitimately interested in Trubisky. Corey, do you think they pull a draft day and get the two guys they want in Myles Garrett and Mitchell Trubisky?
I think it could. I think it very well could happen that the Cleveland Browns select both of them. Listen, I will say this. I understand the thing with Cleveland and these quarterbacks and starting over and the franchise can't get out the pits. But if there ever was a situation to draft a quarterback with the number one overall pick, I do agree that, and listen, a lot of people are not going to agree with this, but the fact that Hugh Jackson is in place, Hugh Jackson knows what he's doing. Hugh Jackson is an offensive genius. Hugh Jackson can develop a young quarterback. But my thing is, I've said it once, I've said it a thousand times. If you're going to draft a young quarterback and have Hugh Jackson develop him, Scotty, I think the guy should be Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I watch Watson on film, and he's a joy to watch. He's got tremendous ability. I love the way he throws the deep ball. Neither one of these guys is polished enough to step in and do it right away.
I think
Watson is, and I was saying this on Sincott and Engel this morning. We were talking about the Jets maybe picking Watson. The thing that people talk about with Watson is he could be the guy to turn a franchise around because not only because of what he does on the field, but he's a great leader, and he's got terrific intangibles, and this is a guy that you want to lead the offense. Trubisky, there's already criticism on him, like, okay, you know, he hasn't started a lot of college games. He can't pick up the blitz. He can't read off the safeties. Watson, he has some other criticism too about his accuracy, whatever. Either these guys have to develop. I just love Watson's athletic ability, but Tony was making some points that a lot of people are still stuck on wanting to have that classic pocket quarterback. I believe Watson, me personally, I agree with you. I think he would be a better pick, especially if you're going to go number one or number five.
Matt. Well, I think Cleveland has so many second and third round draft picks that I think they take Myles Garrett, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Mayock made the point that they're going to trade up to number five with the Titans, and the Titans could drop down to 12. I think that makes a hell of a lot of sense. You can get the quarterback you want at five.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the more logical. I wouldn't pass up on Myles Garrett. I mean, this guy looks the part,
yeah,
everything they need, and you know, just moving up with their ability to move up with their draft capital, it makes too much sense.
I got a list of things that Watson does best. You know, Greg, smooth, efficient delivery, throws the catchable ball, extremely athletic, throws cover three and cover two soon, seems very well. He can throw directly to the route. But the thing about Watson, Greg, that I think is most important is delivers in big moments. He's a confident player. The moment does not get too big for him. You got that they destroyed Ohio State in the Final Four, in the college football Final Four. Right, Greg? 31-0. It's three players in Ohio State secondary that's going to be drafted tonight. And he beat them 31-0. You feel what I'm saying? This is a slam dunk to me.
Realistically, you've talked about Deshaun Watson a lot.
Yes.
Right? You talked about, you believe he's the best quarterback overall. You've been certainly not bashful about that. But, in all honesty, where do you believe he goes tonight?
I think he goes, I'll be honest.
No, totally honest.
I think he goes to the Texans at 25.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Which in your mind, you got to be thrilled at, right? If you're like,
oh, that's
as
excellent.
A Deshaun Watson fan, as a fan of the NFL, like that's a great spot because he has a chance to come in and be a winner again.
He has a chance to come in and make an immediate impact. Another guy developing young, well, supposedly at developing young quarterbacks in O'Brien. You got the Clemson connection with, oh boy, what's the wide receiver that we all love draft? I can't think his name now.
Hopkins.
Yeah, Hopkins. Why did I forget his name? You got Hopkins and Fuller. You got a running game with Lamar Miller. You got an excellent defense. The pieces are in place for Deshaun Watson. If he ends up in Houston, he can step right in from day one and be somebody that can drive that franchise far. Not to mention the fact, I also feel as if he can be fantasy relevant. I think he can be fantasy relevant this year. Is he going to be a quarterback one? More than likely, no. Is it going to be weeks where you stream him, bye weeks and stuff like that if you're in a two quarterback league? Yes.
There's lots of, I like Watson too, but you read the positive. Like
it's some negatives too.
There's negatives too, like deep ball accuracy, scatter shot, and the biggest thing they're saying that
no instincts in the pocket
is that shotgun quarterback who like Goff could take time getting used to huddling pace of play calling and dropbacks from under center. Yeah, this guy he led Clemson to the first national championship in 30 years. I think I like the intangibles on this guy as well as the athletic ability. I don't know if he could step in and right away be that guy. I think he makes sense for a Cleveland or the Jets because I think over time, this is a guy that you can build your franchise around.
I don't want him in the Jets, though.
More than immediate impact.
I get it. No, I think he's immediate impact, though, Scott. I think he can step on the field and win right away. Like Dak. I think he can be like that.
I think there's
in the right situation. If he goes to the Jets and he gets with a defensive-minded coach and they're really not paying no attention, no pieces around him, he's going to be in trouble. One thing I will say about Watson, he had Mike Williams. You know, I can't think of the running back name. Gallman, I think, is the running back name. He had talented pieces around him in Clemson. It was one of the best teams. It was the best team in the country. He goes to a team like the Jets. His number one target is Quincy Enunwa.
Right, but he's got a lot of stuff that he's got to work on at the pro level. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of natural ability, but the finer points of the game have to be worked on. They say the same thing about Trubisky. He's got a big arm. He can make all the throws and everything, but as far as picking up blitzes and reading the secondary, I don't know if in this draft there's a guy who can make a difference right away with a team.
So I agree with that. However, Scotty, the point you bring up with Deshaun Watson's fair, and the same with Trubisky. But if you put either of those guys in the Jets, or really, you put Andrew Luck on the Jets when he's coming out of college,
yeah.
Corey's right. There's no talent around him. So to put a quarterback there with nothing around him, you're almost setting him up to fail.
Yep.
Which is why I don't think the Jets take a quarterback tonight.
Right.
Because you're in a no-win position here. And this isn't like it's Andrew Luck here. This is Mitchell Trubisky, who we don't know will be there. This is Deshaun Watson, who, as much as Corey loves him, has his issues. There's no way Pat Mahomes is going in the top 10 as many people like him. And it's crazy because Emery said this 4 months ago that Pat Mahomes is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Before anyone said it. So big ups to Emery Hunt for that.
Yeah.
The fact is, I think when you pick a quarterback, you need to be able to surround it with something, right? We have seen quarterbacks die because there's nothing around them. That's why when we put Deshaun Watson in the Texans at 25, that's awesome. There are pieces there.
Along
the offensive line, the defense is fantastic.
Coach,
supposedly, we haven't seen that in the NFL yet.
Yes.
So at some point, that's going to go away. Even the Browns, right? Even the Browns have an offensive line. If nothing else, they have the best left tackle in the league.
They got Corey Coleman. They could have Josh. They got Kenny Britt.
They also have
a
quarterback
running
guru.
Game, and they got Hugh Jackson.
So you put Trubisky there. At least there's something there.
Yeah, but when you talk about that, though, we're looking at quarterbacks, especially with Watson, that you want to build something over the long term. You know, you're talking about throwing him to the Texans right away. Like right now, this is a guy that you have to build it over time. And even if the pieces aren't there, you get the pieces over time. Maybe you even draft some of them.
Yeah, but I think the guy that the pick that I'm focused on right now for fantasy purposes is number four. If Jacksonville passes on Leonard Fournette, that's a huge mistake in my opinion. I think it's the perfect situation. I think it helps Allen Robinson. You got Robinson and Hearns.
It slows it down. It slows it down for Bortles.
Yeah. They went in on defense last year. So now this is the second year for those guys. And I think this is the piece they need. I think it's every. Tom Coughlin is in charge. They need a big back. This guy's a beast.
See, man, I don't know if it was me and you that was talking yesterday. Okay? It was somebody that I was talking with. And I when you talk about the Jaguars and the defense, right? When Dallas started building that offensive line, they didn't stop. Every year, the first round, it was Zach Martin, Travis Frederick, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins. They kept going back. I think Jacksonville, on that defense, they should keep going back.
Well, see, there's a stat about, there was a stat this morning that I saw, and pretty much with Blake Bortles. As the deep ball goes, he goes. And they showed 2015 versus 2016. And when you, I mean, I think Fournette is a special, special talent.
He's a good player.
And when you get a guy like that, that just alleviates so much for Blake Bortles. You're giving him the chance to succeed.
Now, you mentioned here Leonard Fournette, obviously. Fournette and McCaffrey's conversation, you brought up several times yesterday. I'm not going to compare the two. I just want to know where we think they go ultimately. Like, I've said many times here that I think, like, McCaffrey could offer more as a three-down player in the NFL. Like, people that are just putting him in like a Danny Woodhead mold.
That's not
really
right.
Doesn't know what Christian McCaffrey is, because that's not the running back he is at all. Both McCaffrey and Fournette are first rounders. I totally agree. Ultimately, Scotty, I'll start with you. Where do you believe that they end up?
I think Fournette goes to the Jaguars at 4.
You do.
And I think tremendous, tremendous fit. I think McCaffrey goes to the Panthers.
Okay.
Later on, I'd like to talk about Fournette, though, and, you know, maybe some of the negatives there, why I would like McCaffrey better.
Okay.
Well, I think Scott put it perfect. I do think McCaffrey to the Panthers is a perfect fit. He can give them that option as a pass catcher, which they desperately need to. That'll help out so many things, and Cam won't get hit as much.
Corey, we'll come back to you after the break to get where you believe Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey end up tonight. I'm going to tell you what. I don't agree with both of you. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you what I don't agree with when we come back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Tonight, live ESPN NFL Network, but also more importantly, most importantly, from a fantasy perspective, Corey Parson has you covered from bell to bell. 7 p.m. is a draft pregame show for an hour, and then 8 p.m. our live draft show here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Corey Parson, Mike Blewett break down every pick from the fantasy perspective, whether it's the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, running backs, or the offensive line, and how that will help you. Corey and Blewett have it covered, Corey.
Yeah, me, myself, Mike Blewett. I got Emery, what you talked about. He'll drop through, not to mention Jake Seeley. He'll be checking in while he's doing the stuff at Roto Experts. He'll also check in. And, you know, it'll be a good time. I think we'll have a couple NFL players in here.
NFL players should be here, which would be cool.
Yeah, I think a boy from Foul Territory, Big Marcus, I know he's planning on hanging out tonight, talking about, because he's got to do that thing tonight. So he should be around. So it's going to be good times. Come down to Rockin' Raleigh's tonight. It's hot in here. Hopefully we get it fixed first.
No. It's hot in here. Yeah. And it's only going to be hotter once Corey and Blewett's draft show starts.
Yeah. Ooh. How about that?
Jake Seeley is going to be doing coverage on rotoexperts.com while it's happening. And Brandon Murchison will have a full first round recap tomorrow, including the non-skill position picks.
So there you go. Roto Experts in the Morning, rotoexperts.com. We both have you absolutely covered for the NFL draft. We're talking Leonard Fournette, and we were talking Christian McCaffrey before we went to break. Both Scott and Modica agree here that Fournette to the Jaguars makes sense, and McCaffrey to the Panthers makes sense. That's what both of you guys have predicted. Corey, I'm going to go to you in a second, but I'm going to tell you where I disagree. Leonard Fournette is not Ezekiel Elliott. I'm going to tell you that. He's not. It's just not the case. He's not the talent to come out of every formation like Ezekiel Elliott does. He's not the pass catching ability that Ezekiel Elliott does. He's not the pass blocking that Ezekiel Elliott does. And unfortunately, we have to compare these two players because they're two potential top five running backs. That's why I'm making the comparison. The Jaguars, you look at this team, they're not this dynamic running back away from making the next step. I don't believe in Blake Bortles. I don't know if you guys do. From a fantasy perspective, maybe. But like in real life, Blake Bortles is not taking this team where it needs to go. To me, obviously, the best spot they could draft would be an offensive lineman. There is no offensive lineman to go in the top five. They're another one of these teams that I think would love to trade down. Tom Coughlin, of course, now the president of football operations. I don't see him taking a running back here with his first pick. I don't think that makes sense for him. For me, what he desperately needed before he left the Giants was to build his defense. I know they spent a lot of draft picks on that defensive line in recent years. Dante Fowler certainly comes to mind. But the secondary they addressed last year, they continue addressing that line. To me, Jonathan Allen will be the guy that the Jaguars pick. Leonard Fournette drops. Now, I'll let you know once Corey goes where I think he's going. I like McCaffrey to the Panthers. I think that's what built up a lot of steam in recent days. It's a perfect fit. I agree with you. When you put him next to Cam, it seems unstoppable. But I don't think Fournette goes to the Jags. I'll tell you where I think Fournette goes in a second. Corey Parson, what about you?
I don't think Fournette goes to the Jaguars either. I think the Jaguars, I think they want to get some help for Blake Bortles. I think that's obviously key. I think the Jaguars take the tight end at four in OJ Howard. I think the Jaguars, listen, the Julius Thomas experiment did not work. Now he's back. Well, he's with Adam Gase out there in Miami. Take a gamble on him late in drafts. I think Fournette goes to the Jets at six. I think Fournette goes to the Jets at six. They don't have nothing else.
You make a lot of good points about Fournette, because when you watch him on film, now NFL.com, when they do the scouting reports, they always give a pro comparison, and they said Bo Jackson. I was like, wow. But then you watch him on film. He is a unique combination of power and speed, but he also doesn't make people miss. And because of his very physical style, like I saw him, like, you know, just like bowl guys from TCU over, like step on them and stuff like that when I'm watching film, though. But very physical guy. He runs upright. You know, there could be worries about, you know, when a guy like that dishes it out as good as he takes it, will he get hurt? You know, that's another thing with him that I worry about with Fournette. So I agree with you on a lot of points that you said, Greg. And also, Tony was making some good points. Like, Fournette's almost like what running backs used to be and are not in nowadays sort of NFL, that pro-style, hard-charging, workhorse kind of running back. You know, McCaffrey's more of in vogue what you see today.
Well, I think there was a guy a few years back who got drafted, and then he dropped some weight before the season, Le'Veon Bell. Mm-hmm. And I think if Leonard Fournette maybe drops a few pounds and increases even some more speed with that size, I don't know. I am sold on this guy being a stud.
But the thing with Bell is his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. I haven't seen that from Fournette.
Yeah. Bell makes people miss. Fournette doesn't make people miss.
Well, I mean, look, he's going to go into a NFL system. You know, he is going to have to change certain things. I think the pass-catching ability, I think this is a special talent. He'll be able to catch the ball. I'm not worried about that. Maybe he didn't do it that much, but I don't know. When you get this guy in the open field, it's going to be dangerous.
Corey, if Carolina is up and both Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey are on the clock,
oh boy,
who do you think they take?
Carolina, Shula. How much say does Shula have in the draft room?
Sure.
Ron Rivera.
Dave Gettleman.
Mm-hmm. That whole crew. I think they take McCaffrey. If both of them are there, I think the Panthers take McCaffrey.
I don't think they do.
You think they go Fournette? Mm-hmm. You think they go for the power running game? Mm-hmm. See, I got Shula as more of a finesse. Can you imagine? You really don't see too much read option unless how the Cowboys run it, how the Seahawks run it. But Carolina can run it like that. Can you imagine running read option with Christian McCaffrey?
I'm with you. It's great. It'll be unstoppable, I think.
I mean, I think if the Jets are there, if Fournette's there and the Jets don't take him, that is a total miss. They have nothing.
They don't have nothing.
And if the Jets had a chance
to get Ezekiel last year and they passed on it.
But now they're terrible. And if they're bad again this year, they can get the kid from USC. I mean, you get the running back, you give him that first year experience, and you can get your franchise guy next year.
Remember, Scotty, the Jets should have been a playoff team in 2015. They should have made the playoffs.
They should have taken Ezekiel Elliott last year.
I'm glad they didn't.
I think if Fournette is there and he's a sensible pick, I think the Jets pass because that's what the Jets do. And I agree with Greg. I agree with you. It's like McCaffrey makes so much sense in that offense because, you know, they've run the power thing with Stewart for years. But although Fournette's very different, like Matt is saying, he's a unique combination of power and speed. But when you have explosiveness like that, and versatility like that with Cam Newton, that offense would be super dynamic.
Everybody was, towards the end of the year last year, everybody was talking about Le'Veon Bell and how Le'Veon Bell runs, and that's how the running backs of the future are going to run. That's how Christian McCaffrey runs. Not everybody can run like Le'Veon Bell because you don't have the burst and the explosion to stop in the hole, patiently wait for the block, and then accelerate.
Fournette doesn't do that.
McCaffrey can do that. Nah, Fournette's not that type of runner. Fournette is like Adrian Peterson.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Mike Mayock compared McCaffrey to LeSean McCoy. He said, he was giving it high praise because he thinks, you know, LeSean McCoy is one of the
Nobody cuts like LeSean McCoy.
Yeah, and he's the best cutback runner I've ever seen. He broke it down really well.
But McCaffrey, very, very electric cutback runner.
100%.
Yeah.
100% agree. It's going to be really, really fun where this goes tonight, obviously, with Fournette and McCaffrey.
I guess we've seen the other two guys in the NFL, but if you had to pick running back.
Right now?
Right now. McCaffrey, Fournette, Zeke, or Gurley?
McCaffrey, Fournette.
Are they all behind the Dallas line?
Nah, this is a regular the Raiders line, a decent, an above average offensive line.
So this is really interesting because I think for everybody, like, Zeke's got to be first given what he did last year, given that he is in the Cowboys line.
Yeah.
He participates in all three facets of the game. I think Zeke has to be first to everybody. I think you take that out of the equation. But if you put Gurley there with them, knowing what line Gurley has to deal with, know what Gurley has looked like all of last year, the second half of the year before, I think makes for a really interesting conversation. Again, you don't, and maybe this is a better conversation for tomorrow where we know where McCaffrey is, no doubt. And we know where Fournette is. But it's really interesting. Like, even in a fantasy football draft this year, Corey, like, you know, Zeke's going early. Like,
this is what you're going to be faced with at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
Because this conversation with Gurley, Fournette, and McCaffrey, this may be a conversation we have all the way up until September.
If McCaffrey's on the Panthers.
Right.
And you're in the middle of the second round and you're looking at Gurley and McCaffrey, who do you take?
In the PPR, it's going to be tough not to take McCaffrey.
Yeah.
I mean, I play PPR only.
Yeah.
And one of the things you look at is guys that can catch the ball. I took Zeke number 10 in one league because Zeke had the talent, had that line.
Yeah. What happened with Ezekiel Elliott last year, it lined up perfectly. But it doesn't always work that way because, Scott, as you remember, when we first started doing it, Ryan Matthews lined up perfectly.
Yes.
Catch the football well, was an excellent runner, power runner, and he was going to San Diego and North Turner was there.
Yeah.
And then, it looked like a slam dunk.
And then he lined up perfectly on the training table.
No, he didn't line up perfectly. That was the issue. His body wasn't lined.
That's true. Good point.
But, you know, in that PBR, it's going to be very, very tempting to take Christian McCaffrey over a guy like Todd Gurley who doesn't catch passes. But of course, then you make the argument, new coach for Todd Gurley, he's the man in Los Angeles, McCaffrey does have Jonathan Stewart still there, like, you're gonna have these things going on.
Yeah, and there's the one thing about McCaffrey's not a power guy, the one thing is, can he be a consistent goal line runner?
Right. Yeah. But again, Jonathan Stewart's good. If he's in Carolina, Jay Stu's going to be there to steal touchdowns.
Like Fournette, score more touchdowns than him, possibly.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, I think the interesting story after those two running is Dalvin Cook. And now, Bob McGinn has him going 19 to the Bucks. Mike Mayock made the point. The Bucks want to pull the trigger. They take somebody in the secondary. And he's got Cook going to the Chiefs.
It's very interesting. And we've talked a lot.
I think Bucky Brooks had him going to the Chiefs, too.
We've talked a lot about that Dalvin Cook-Tampa Bay connection, given that Cook's a Florida kid. He had some issues in Florida. Went to Florida State. Then to stay in Florida, That has me nervous. Now, the fit makes plenty of sense, given that they need a running back, given Doug Martin's issues, given that they're a young, up-and-coming team. Like, that's a team that you drop a running back in, and it makes the entire offense better. I see that 1,000%.
That is a up-and-coming, fantasy-friendly offense right there. You know how we like to draft Colts and Packers. Tampa Bay is going to be one of those teams this year. The thing about it is, and I guess we'll get to this after the break, do you think Jameis can be the kind of leader to pull aside Dalvin Cook and be like, yo, listen, the shit stops now?
They played together, no?
They did play together. Yes, they played together.
So maybe that's why they feel they can get away with it. We'll talk more about Dalvin Cook and get into the wide receivers coming up next here on the Little Experts in the Morning. Turn here on the Roto Experts in the Morning, talking about the draft, which takes place tonight. Of course, your coverage, RotoExperts.com. Roto Experts in the Morning. I feel some air, gentlemen. Do you guys feel this?
Yeah, it's
getting down a little bit here.
I feel like the draft tonight's the first outdoor draft. They're actually doing it like on the Philadelphia Art Museum steps.
They are. Have you been to the Philadelphia Art Museum, Scott?
No, but you went this summer and sent me some really cool pictures.
I did.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I went up the steps about 2 years. Yeah, matter of fact, it was around the draft 2 years ago. I took a nighttime run up the steps.
That's nice.
I was panting too.
You're a bum.
Why did you rub that belly?
Yeah, you go right there. That's the mating call. Yeah. Had a couple too. Good time. Shout out to Miss V.
We were mentioning Dalvin Cook just a second ago, and the Tampa Bay from a just drop a person in standpoint, it makes a lot of sense, right? You just drop Dalvin Cook right into Tampa Bay. But keeping him in Florida worries me, Corey.
Yeah, I get it. The keeping him in Florida part, I think people look at it as a red flag. But, you know, people, Dante Fowler stayed in Florida. You feel what I'm saying?
Yep.
Jalen Ramsey stayed. But they don't have the things that Cook has outside the field. Listen, he's not going to be in Miami. I don't know how far Miami is from Tampa. He has an entourage that people say can be troublesome. He has some immaturity things with the thing with the dogs was an immaturity thing. He has a domestic violence thing, no tape of it. But if you get him in Tampa, I think he wants to be in Tampa. I think the Buccaneers did a poll and asked their fans who the fans wanted. The fans want Dalvin Cook. I'm sure Jameis wants Dalvin Cook. Is Jameis enough of a leader to be like, yo, listen, son, you come in here, all of that other stuff, you got to leave that out the window, because we have a real opportunity here. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers could very well win that division this year.
Sure, absolutely.
And Cook can be a big part of that. Now, Cook also has some medical red flags. He has a shoulder thing that's been bothering him, and running backs don't like to block. And if you're blocking and you have a chronic shoulder, then, you can't get Jameis Winston's head knocked off. You feel what I'm saying, Matt? Do you think Jameis can be enough of a leader to be like, listen, we got to get this done right now? Jameis has maturity issues himself. You feel what I'm saying? Do you think Jameis can be that guy, man? I'm curious.
I think he can. I think the crab legs days are past him. I think he's ready. He's got his feet under him a couple of years in the league. I love the addition of Sean Jackson to this team. And even if they don't go Cook, because, getting somebody in that secondary would be really nice. And they say they got a guy like Kareem Hunt, maybe later on in the draft. That would be really appealing to me as well.
So you think they should go defense early and then get the back a little bit later on?
I really like Cook, and maybe I'm getting, maybe I'm listening too much to the crowd and stuff. Because I really did. I mean, I loved watching him. I did like him. I know he didn't perform well in the Underwear Olympics. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm being swayed.
So, you got the off the field, Scotty. You got the off the field. You got the medical red flags. Bless you. And then you have the fumbles for Cook.
Yeah.
The fumbles is troublesome too, Greg.
Yeah, like NFL.com was saying, one NFC executive said, fumbles and arrests are a bad combination. that was a quote on NFL.com. He's got a lot of ability, but he's got off-the-field problems with ball security and multiple arrests over it. You have to decide.
A lot of the arrests are from high school.
Right. He said you have to decide if he will be more responsible with more money, more time on his hands. If you have any doubts, just wait around for another running back because there will be plenty this year.
Sure.
But your point about Jameis Winston did put that incident behind him. So he can be that kind of guy to tell you, look, kid, you got to put this behind you because you can be an important part of this offense.
Yeah, I talked to people close to Jameis Winston that basically said, listen, he was not at all, and you've said this repeatedly, Corey, Jameis Winston was never a bad guy. Like, he got caught up in the wrong situation and was taken advantage of by some people. But he truly was never this like bad guy. Like, I think, in all honesty,
he's an athlete, been playing ball his whole life. You feel what I'm saying?
In all honesty, people,
baseball player.
In all honesty, Cam Newton probably had more red flags coming out of college.
Yep, you're right.
Than Jameis Winston did. And Cam Newton, on the field, off the field, I mean, forget some things you could whispers about. He's been a choir boy. He's never been arrested. Never been arrested off the field. You know,
he's awkward. Put it like that.
He's awkward. He does his pouting thing where it pisses people off. But he's never been in trouble with the law.
No, he's never been in trouble with the
once he got the NFL. Now, so what I'm saying is it can turn around, because Cam Newton did have issues in college. It can turn around, but you need the right people. You're the right system in place.
Okay, I think I just look at it a little bit differently. When you look at, I don't know enough about Cook, but I know about the area and the people around him.
Okay.
And so Antonio Brown, no issues. T.Y. Hilton, no issues.
And again, Antonio Brown is someone that had issues before in his life.
Exactly. Antonio Brown did have. T.Y. Hilton's always been just nothing but a ball player.
Correct.
I can't think of some of the other.
Amari Cooper, right?
Amari Cooper. Teddy Bridgewater. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So this is. But Cook got a little bit of the underbelly in him. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. So what I think is really interesting is these guys that you said have made it to the show and it's not
and they hit.
They're not only good, but they have survived it. Now I'm sure there's names that we don't know that haven't hit
exactly.
Right? Like, so
was the quarterback from Miami a couple years ago.
Which one?
Oh man, maybe about a decade or so ago.
Ken Dorsey?
Not Ken Dorsey.
Okay.
Come a little bit after Ken Dorsey, Miami start. They had a real good quarterback.
Okay.
That was from Liberty City also. And he was supposed to be a big time NFL guy, but he had terrible off the field issues. But for the most part, like you said, the ones we know, the ones that do make it to the show, really haven't seen that many issues with them. Teddy Bridgewater is a stand up guy. Amari Cooper, you never hear a word. Antonio Brown had issues in the past. T.Y. Hilton, no issues at all, period. So, I mean, it's hit or miss. Now, Cook, when he was in his high school years, in his, you know, his teenage years, yeah, Cook was Cook was running and gunning. He was hanging with the wrong crowd. Florida State, domestic violence, and the weird incident with the dogs, which I just don't get that at all.
Yeah. So, Stephen Morris, the quarterback you're thinking of.
No, it's not.
No,
him.
Really?
Jacoby
Harris? Jacoby Harris.
Jacoby Harris. Yeah, him. Mm-hmm. Him. Jacoby Harris. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think people are saying that Cook's going to drop out of the first round. Like, I don't think Cook should drop out the first round, Scott.
No, not with the talent. The only thing that I wonder about is, does he go to Tampa Bay?
Right.
He's not really a power runner. Who's the finisher at the goal line?
Mike Evans.
James Winston, Doug Martin. You know, those guys are still there. But putting a guy like this in KC, who I don't think will draft the running back, Green Bay, I've said it all along, I think there's going to be a good spike. I've said all along, I think Joe Mixon goes to Green Bay. Like, we've been pretty solid on that, Corey.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I worry about any running back going to Green Bay because they put the running game so secondary.
Well, I'm not even talking about from a fantasy perspective. I'm talking about from a real life perspective. Joe Mixon, given all his issues.
Right.
Just you hide him in
character perspective.
You hide him in Green Bay, not a big market. Aaron Rodgers is there.
I think his fantasy value would really be great.
I agree.
I know they put it secondary, but that dude can catch passes.
I agree.
And with that talent, and when you have the wide receivers that they have, I think that's the perfect spot. I agree everything you said.
I worry fantasy wise about any running back that's going to Green Bay.
And he's had some successful years in Green Bay.
I know, but I felt like they always felt like the running game was second and he could have more success. I feel like I feel like it's not like the guy's going to disappear or anything, but I just feel like there's more fantasy upside for a guy like Mixon if he goes somewhere else.
Okay. When it comes to the wide receivers, what's really interesting about this is Corey, for instance, all about Mike Williams. He thinks that Mike Williams is the best wide receiver in the draft. I know, I think Jake believes that Corey Davis is the best wide receiver in the draft.
Too, yeah.
Other people believe, and maybe you, Matt, that think John Ross is the best wide receiver in the draft. I don't know if that's true, but the fact is there's these three guys, and nobody knows who truly is the best wide receiver, kind of like the quarterbacks and the running backs this year. There's no clear shining lights. You've seen Mike Williams go anywhere from the top 10 to number 26 overall. That is the range for all of these guys. What order, Matt, do you see them going in tonight?
I'm just kind of falling in love with Corey Davis. I think he has that modern-day, futuristic wide receiver thing that we all want. The size, the speed. He can block, too. I mean, Mike Williams is probably the safer floor
guy. Given Davis' injuries.
You know, and all that. But I would do Davis, Williams, then Ross. I think Ross, you know, adds a lot, but he's so little and injury-prone that it kind of scares me.
Scott, how much do you take on pedigree coming out of colleges, right? Like Clemson has had a host of wide receivers that have come out and been successful in the NFL, from Sammy Watkins to DeAndre Hopkins. Mike Williams is in that class, right? We have seen that. John Ross out there in Washington, you're like, Corey Davis in Western Michigan, There's no pedigree there. How much do you take that into account?
I don't know. It's not the end-all, be-all for me, although you can't ignore it. I look at Williams, and, you know, he's drawn comparisons to Plaxico Burress.
Yep.
His catch radius is incredible. Gets deep very well. But I think Corey Davis has a lot of that, too. And I think he's a better route runner from what I've seen. And I think Matt really hit it pretty much on the target. You know, when he talked about Ross, Ross is more like a deep specialist, kick return type of guy. I think Williams is going to go first, but I like Corey Davis a lot, much like Matt does.
Ross got that DeSean Jackson to him, but Ross can also, his yak is going to be crazy.
Yeah, it is too, but
his yak is going to be crazy. Like, he's not really a fly pattern guy.
I don't know.
Would you compare him to Brandon Cooks?
He's not just a pure fly pattern guy, but I don't put him in the range with Williams and Davis. I don't. You know what it is? He's a different type of receiver than those other two guys. And whatever teams are drafting him, do we want that deep guy? Do we want that big play guy? Or do we want that more complete receiver?
I don't. Brandon Cooks is an intriguing player comp for Ross. I'm trying to. I just think that people say Brandon Cooks, people say DeSean Jackson, kind of, you know, lining him up with those speed guys. I think he has more. You know how DeSean Jackson is boom or bust?
Yeah.
I think he's more dependable. I think he's more dependable than DeSean Jackson. Right. I think that's what's going to be his NFL game.
Like, he's got deep gear, but you can't rely on him.
I
want to see him change.
I don't know. Okay, put it like this. One of these big three wide receivers is going to go to the Tennessee Titans.
Yes.
For what we do for fantasy purposes.
Probably.
For what we do for fantasy purposes, which one do you think is the guy that can be, which one fits, one of them is going to be in Tennessee? Who has the most fantasy upside in Tennessee?
In my opinion, it's John Ross.
In my opinion, I would go, this is tough. I think I would go Corey Davis if I'm Tennessee.
I think Corey Davis is the best fit, but I think Williams would have the most upside.
I think Tennessee desperately needs a game breaker. That's what Ross is.
They got Rasheed Matthews.
Absolutely.
If Mike Williams, they can get his hands on him, though, he'd be a game breaker, too.
All these guys have potential to be game breakers, like, right?
But what I'm saying is this guy is big, he's a game breaker, too.
Absolutely.
I think he's more complete.
And I don't disagree with that. I think John Ross, I think we can all agree that he's probably the fastest guy out of these three.
Well, yeah.
And I think they need someone to stretch the field. And I think John Ross is the best out of these three guys.
Well, hopefully Corey Davis goes to the Bills at 10.
Now, interestingly enough, about Ross and Davis, they both have their injury concerns. That's why if I was a GM, I'd take Mike Williams, because I think, as Scott mentioned, he seems the safest.
Yeah,
he seems the most complete. He seems the safest. Give me Mike Williams first, and then I'll choose between Corey Davis and John Ross.
It's going to be interesting to see. The Tennessee Titans are one of the teams that I think fantasy owners really should be interested, because just like Tampa Bay, that's a situation where you can have a instant piece that steps right in, and they can become a very good fantasy offense. Tajae Sharpe can go back to, you know, get his development together. You know, he was a preseason darling last year. Then he flashed again later on in the season. Rashad Matthews was excellent, but they use him like Washington uses Crowder. They use him to take big shots down the field in that intermediate range. But I think Mike Williams or Corey Davis can be that every down wide receiver one for Tennessee.
I'll tell you what, in Bob McGinn's Journal Sentinel mock draft, he has John Ross to Tennessee at 19.
Yeah.
Corey Davis, 27 to the Chiefs. Mike Williams at 30 to the Steelers. Mick Shea, for instance, has Corey Davis to the Titans at 18. He has Mike Williams at 14 to Philly, and he has John Ross 31 to the Falcons. These guys are all over the board on these wide receivers. Yeah.
I would take Mike Williams at number 10 as well.
Just like John Ross.
They don't have Buffalo coming out the first round with a wide receiver?
They do not.
Wow. No, a lot of teams got them going with defense.
We'll come back. When we do, we'll be at the park. It'll be Scott Engel. It'll be Chris Beyer. We'll be in Washington when we return here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Hanging out here in Fantasy Sports Radio Network Studios, Rock and Riley's Manhattan, New York City, home of Draft Party tonight. Corey Parson will have your draft coverage. But right now, we head to the park, where, Scotty, you've had an opportunity. I know you've been teasing this one all week. You've been excited about it. To catch up with the bench coach of the Washington Nationals.
Yeah, Chris Spire, former San Francisco Giants infielder. And here, you know, he talks about, it was interesting to ask him, like, he's a real old-school guy, to talk about, like, the deluge of analytics that we've had recently in baseball and how it applies to the Nationals.
Do you feel like it helps guys like Murph and some of your players to crunch the numbers?
Well, I think, you know, it depends on the individual. I think it's always good to have as much information as you possibly can. This is a game that you have to kind of play naturally. Some people can take all that information and be able to process it and put it where it belongs. You know, and other guys are more field guys, and they, you know, go on instincts and go on what feels good. And sometimes the more information you give somebody, you know, the more confused they get. But, you know, I think Murph has figured out how to put it all together.
There you go. There's a touch of what Chris Beyer told Scotty at the park this week, and that was regarding Danny Murphy. But, Scotty, I know you got a lot more from Chris Beyer.
Yeah, and you can listen to this on demand on Audio Boom, iTunes, Google Play, etc. And I'll have a Roto Expert at the park with the Nationals up. And he talked a lot about why he thinks Bryce Harper's off to a good start again. With Murphy, he mentions, and you'll hear this because we'll have Murphy as well coming up. Murphy's a guy who actually like studies fan graphs and like looks at all these analytics, which is why I brought that up with him. And we know Cota Glover's on the DL, but he also goes in depth about this closer situation as well.
Yeah, so really, really good information here from Chris Beyer. I suggest you check it out. It's on the app. It's on Audio Boom. It's on demand wherever you listen to your podcast, wherever you listen to us. You can get Scotty's full interview with Chris Beyer there. Roto Experts at the Park every single morning at 8:55 a.m. Eastern Time, Scotty.
Yeah, and also on demand today will be Ryan Zimmerman, Max Scherzer, and as I mentioned, Daniel Murphy. Where Daniel Murphy's an interesting kind of guy. It's you know, all of those are up on demand right now. You know, he does study the numbers, and he talked a lot to Ryan Zimmerman about it, which kind of helped Ryan Zimmerman's quick start. But he's like, I'm not going to take any credit for anything that Zimmerman does.
That's kind of Chris Beyer.
Murphy.
That's kind of Danny Murphy too.
Yeah.
So yeah, as Scotty mentioned, all this stuff is on demand, and you get the opportunity to check it out. Hey, Modica, I wanted to ask you with the NFL draft tonight. Are you going to watch it? Because you got the Rangers on.
Well, the Rangers will be on the big screen.
Okay.
I'm going to have an issue. We have two TVs. The wife will be home tonight.
Uh-oh.
So
you're not watching the draft.
I will have to just tell you, it's for work, and that usually gets it done.
It's a good idea.
Interesting.
So I mean, get some, maybe I'll order her favorite meal or something.
What about on the iPad? You can't just do it on the iPad?
Well, yeah, they'll have the iPad too, so maybe that'll work. But, you know, I've got to be seeing other baseball games.
I forgot about the baseball games. We spent the last hour just so focused on football that I forgot about the baseball
games. It's a great day.
It's a great day. As I kept saying, it was Christmas.
afternoon baseball.
Well, afternoon.
Watch that and then watch the draft later. Like,
oh, boy. We got a fun day. Now, speaking, of course, of afternoon baseball and baseball, let's get into some of yesterday's afternoon baseball where we have a freaking Nostradamus next to us over here. So we'll get into baseball from yesterday here in hour number two of the Roto Experts of the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a few.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning. Excited. Starts now.
Number two of the Roto Experts in the Morning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Keg, Scott Engel, Fantasy Executive Corey Parson, Matty Modica here as well. And Scotty, we're just going back from break, and you asked an interesting question. I wanted you to pose it on air.
Why all this love for O.J. Howard?
So what do you see or hear that has you not in love with O.J. Howard?
Some of the scouting reports I read, I watched film on him, and he's good, but they've questioned his character. They said he's passive and stuff like that. I'm reading that on NFL.com, and you know, a tight end in the first round, it's like, he's good, but is this guy Gronk?
Yeah, he can be.
He can be, yeah. I think. He can be.
The NFL.com comparison I read said Julius Thomas.
Well, no, okay, Julius Thomas has
look
damn
how
good
athletic
years.
Julius.
Would you draft Julius?
This guy,
if he stayed healthy, sure.
He's Julius
you
Thomas.
You would draft Julius Thomas in the top
Julius 10. Thomas, and he can block like one of the best tackles in the game. That's
what,
the thing.
That's what Mike Mayock said last night. He went back to Alabama to prove that he could block.
Yeah,
and that he can to block. Me is, you know, some that's
the, he's a stand-up blocker, he's an inline blocker, and he's a mismatch in the field. He's like, you can run the offense through him.
NFL.com, weaknesses. Will need more muscle and mass to be an inline blocker as a pro. Appears passive. Doesn't have the field demeanor of most Alabama players.
Okay, so that's one NFL.com from who?
It's NFL.com scouting report.
From who wrote it?
I'm not sure who wrote it, but it's from NFL.com.
I'm going to trust every other insight.
Bottom line, Howard has struggled to live up to the hype that has come out with his playmaking ability while at Alabama.
Well, first of all, Alabama doesn't
Lance Zierlein at NFL.com.
Alabama really doesn't employ a tight end. They don't use a tight end in the passing game. They run the football a lot.
Correct.
They have the playmakers on the outside. But O.J. Howard, like, you get him out of Alabama, O.J. Howard is like, you can run the offense through him. He's like Greg Olsen.
Would you draft Greg Olsen or Julius Thomas in the top 15 if they were available today?
I would draft Greg Olsen in the top 15 if he's available. Absolutely.
Jason Braddock's got him going number four, too. I mean,
Jason Braddock,
all these guys really got him going hard.
I would definitely draft Greg Olsen in the top 15.
Maybe I'm wrong on this, because, like, and tight ends
tend to take
longer to develop at the NFL level too. We know this.
Oh, they certainly did.
Yeah. Those are the two things that perplex me over the last 2 days. The other being like all of a sudden this outpouring of positivity for Marshawn Lynch's return. I don't get that either.
Well, why don't you go into that then, Scott?
Yeah, Scott. Yeah. Why are you hating?
I'm not hating on Lynch. What I'm saying is everybody's acting like, and Matt made a great point, which I'll get to in a minute. Everybody's acting like he's coming back, like the return of beast mode, blah, blah, blah. When this guy, the last time we saw him in 2015, everybody was waiting for him to fall off, was for Clayman Thomas rolls the next thing. He averaged 3.8 yards per carry. He played 7 games. He didn't look like he did in his prime. And just because he's coming back, everybody's talking about, okay, he's going to be this great goal line runner and the return of beast mode and everything. We don't know that he's not going to be any better than Latavius Murray was last year. Maybe he could score 10 touchdowns, but what is he going to do in terms of yards? There could be games where it's 12 carries for 30 yards and one touchdown. The guy hasn't played in the year. He's and still, like we talked about 2 years ago, there's a ton of tread on his tires, and he's 31 years old. I'm not saying that Marshawn Lynch is going to be a bust, but everybody's making like, whoa, the return of beast mode. You know, there's going to be a great return. Matt said this shows how you pointed to, Corey, nothing outside of the top 5 running backs excites me. Matt said on Twitter, he said, this shows like the dearth of running backs like after the top 5.
Say it in his voice.
What?
Say it in his voice.
Well, you know, this basically shows, you know, like, after the top five, there's really not a lot out there.
I love it. All right, but go, you got something to say, Greg? Because I was going to ask Scotty a couple questions.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say is unrelated to Marshawn Lynch's little draft nugget. I just saw that I wanted to put throughout that. Then you go back to Lynch in 1 second, Corey. Jason Cole says there's growing chatter about Deshaun Watson too. The Jacksonville Jaguars at number 4 overall. Ooh. Pete Prisco says he hears that Tom Coughlin loves him.
If you put him in Jacksonville, that's
a good spot.
That's over. Too bad. You put him in Jacksonville. Doug Marrone. Yeah, I like it in Jacksonville. Jacksonville is a good destination. Has weapons for him. So basically, if they take him tonight, they're basically saying that Watson gives them a better chance to win right now than Blake Bortles does. I think Jacksonville thinks they can win right now.
I agree with you.
I think they think they can win right now.
I think they're Deshaun Watson away.
And I think O.J. Howard is a guy that can help them win right now, Jacksonville. But Blake Bortles is an issue.
Blake Bortles is definitely an issue. Hey, I want to get into you being Nostradamus when we come back.
Oh, yeah, we got to do that.
We'll talk some baseball from last night. Stick around. It's the Road to Westerns in the morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is the Roto Experts in the morning. What's poppin'?
It is a big day. A big day to break down from yesterday as well. A lot happened. Corey put the hex out there with his crazy voodoo and stuff. Not
selfish
good, Corey.
Hex.
Not good.
Yeah.
Sorry about
this is disaster. Yeah, I had to do that. I couldn't take Eric Thames hitting home runs every night. So what, we got a little disabled list thing? Day-to-day.
He's going to play tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
You don't know for sure he's playing tomorrow.
They said
tomorrow.
That about Trey Turner. They said he's likely to play tomorrow. I don't know for sure, but he's expected to play tomorrow.
We will see about that. I don't know,
I don't
Scott.
Want Corey to get his DL wish.
A 10-day stint. But listen, a tight hamstring to slow him down too? That works for me. Because the tight hamstring is going to slow you down.
Very selfish.
And we talked to Dr. A last week. You got to drive off that back leg. It limits it limits power, and he could aggravate it.
Wait for the inevitable slump. Don't wish for the guy to get hurt.
Scott.
You're better than that.
Scott. So you don't draft players like Derrick Henry? You don't draft players like, you know, CJ? Like, you draft players, Scott, and your analysis on the player would be, well, you know, if such and such get hurt, this guy's going to be a star.
Yeah, but I don't sit there and say, that's different than saying I want him to get hurt.
I didn't say I.
Yes,
I
you
didn't
did.
Say, I said.
Yes, you did. You said I need him. I want him to go on the DL. Need, want, whatever. Very
Scott,
selfish.
I wasn't talking about
you
the 30
poking
day.
Some, needles some
yeah, you are. You are a dollar, man. Don't try to skate out of it.
See, I don't like nobody to get too big for their britches. Eric Thames was getting
You're
his britches.
Too big for your britches when you ask for somebody to get injured.
I've already sat on the bench, Scott. I've already sat on the bench.
You shouldn't be wishing for a guy to get injured. Very selfish, and you're better than that.
Well, you know what? Corey's dreams came true.
It happened.
Not really, because he didn't go on the DL.
Not yet.
It's coming.
We don't know that it's coming.
We don't know it's coming, but it could. I mean, the fact is, Corey didn't ask for him to, like, get serious.
I still wish for him to get hurt. I didn't want no ligament injury.
He asked for an ACL.
I didn't want a season
ender. He asked for what he got, basically.
I wanted something.
It's still wrong no matter what.
Come on, Scott.
He asked for a little tweak. He got a little tweak.
You're a fantasy snob, Scott.
Yeah, and
you're a fantasy snob.
And you know what? You're a fantasy lowbrow.
I'm lowbrow because I want him to tweak his hamstring.
Well, on that
strain
point,
his oblique a little
on
bit.
On that point, you are, and I think you're better than that. What do you want to ask me about Marshawn Lynch?
Well, we're past that, right?
Okay.
Sorry about it. We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
The Eric Thames. Eric Thames, with or without Milwaukee sweep Cincinnati yesterday. They finished the game 9-4. Eric Thames was 1-for-3, had a couple of runs scored. Orlando Arcia felt a little pressure there from Hernán Pérez after the outing the day before. Hit his second home run of the year yesterday. Hernán Pérez only went 1-for-4, but he had a run. He had an RBI. He's awesome. I want to pick him up even though he doesn't play every day. Travis Shaw was 2-for-5. Ryan Braun, also 2-for-5. Shaw stole his second base of the season. For Cincinnati, not much going on besides Scott Schebler. Although, Adam Duvall had another homer. Oh, you have the bell there. Okay.
Yeah, Adam Duvall.
Yo, been, son. He's can't. Adam Duvall is my guy.
Yeah.
He's my guy. You know what I'm saying? He is carrying my team in the power department. Him and him, Blackman, and Rizzo. After the Tout Wars draft, everybody was like, oh, I like the team except Adam Duvall. And yeah. Adam Duvall is now like, screw you guys.
So there you right. go.
He's right. happy to be on my team, Adam Duvall.
Adam Duvall.
He's batting 228, though.
I know. Yeah.
But you know what, though?
I didn't look at that.
You know what, though? He's got a bad BABIP of 224, so it's probably going to come up.
But he's also a fly ball guy. I mean, look, I think Adam Duvall can... If he stays healthy the whole year, he can get you the home runs. I'm not going to buy the average. Yeah. I understand the BABIP is...
I think you get a 250, though, and you're going to get a nice amount of power. And then on the other side, with Milwaukee, Jed Bandy with 3 more hits, it's like both of these catchers, Bandy and Pena, continue to hit.
Joey Votto hit his 7th last night. Schebler had 2. Matt, is Scott Schebler someone that should be on our radar, despite batting 203 currently?
Yeah, I mean, he's him and Adam Duvall, you know, like we just said, they ain't hitting for average, but they're putting balls in the seats. I think, you know, right now, Cincinnati's going to be interesting. If they can get, you know, something for Duvall, which I think they're hoping, you know, for a team, maybe like an American League.
Right.
Shevlin, they do want to see what they have in him. This is a guy they are going like to, you know, I think he's better than 203. I don't know what his ultimate upside is.
Now, I do want to clarify something that we were saying yesterday in regards to Eric Thames. I know you, Scotty, you called out Corey for being pretty terrible and ready for injuries. Now, what was it exactly you said again, Corey? Let me hear this back.
Get the fantasy advice you need on your morning commute with the Roto Experts in the Morning.
I need Eric Thames to spend a couple weeks on a disabled list.
So you're asking questions and injuries, I'm running.
I need Eric Thames to spend a couple weeks on a disabled list so he can be humble.
Why don't you just wait for what's naturally going to happen? He's going to cool off at some point. He's going to go through a cold
I'm not
spell.
Sure of that right now.
Roto Experts.
All right. Oh, well, sorry. It looks
a
like...
A couple weeks on a disabled list.
Yeah. It looks like you weren't just looking for a little hamstring strain. You wanted a couple weeks on the disabled list.
The 10-day DL to slow him down. Nothing wrong with that.
No. You didn't want 10 days. You wanted
a couple of weeks.
We can play it back for you again if you'd like.
The 14-day disabled list. To slow him down.
There is no 14-day DL.
They got rid of it?
It's 15-day.
It used to be 15.
The 15-day disabled list to slow him down. They made it 10? That slows him down. That when he gets back out there, it takes him a little bit longer to get the home run stroke back. Dude, I'm rooting for him. Don't get me wrong. I'm rooting for him. I want him to have a nice
you're
season.
I'm rooting for him to get hurt.
I'm rooting for him. I don't want him to go through the whole season hitting home runs and carrying fantasy teams to championship. I need him to slow down to even the playing field.
That's going
to
happen, though. Scott, it happens on, to every on. Player.
You want to hear how much Corey's rooting for him?
Yeah.
This is how much Corey's rooting for him.
No. Well, how about this? Corey has lost us the whole Korean community.
You want God to go on the DL?
No, yesterday when I was talking about him on Old School, I did, if I'm not mistaken, I did give a shout out to Korea. So Korea's on my side.
I don't know. I heard there's some people waiting for you outside the hotel today.
All right, let's move on then, because yesterday wasn't just Eric Thames getting injured day. It was also your day here, Matty Modica, because it was James Paxton day.
Well, I guess they call him the Big Maple now and stuff like that. He's not really even my guy. He's a guy that I defended. I mean, everybody was on him. I defended him and his price in the draft season, because many were like, he's going way too high. And now everybody owns him. You know, on Twitter, I've gotten in some arguments and stuff. And everybody's telling me, I paid up. You misunderstood what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You know, whatever. You know, you don't want to...
A lot of after-the-fact guys out there.
There's a lot
there.
Of podcasts of what people said.
Yeah.
There's what people wrote. Yep. You know, shit gets recorded.
It does, yeah.
You write something down.
It don't and, lie.
You know, and then I love when people say, well, I discovered him. Pretty much.
Christopher Columbus.
Yeah.
The leagues that I play in, before anybody usually puts pen to paper or finger to keyboard, guy's been picked up.
Yep.
That guy's been picked up because we can't wait. We can't wait to see if this is, you know, something, a second start. But let's get back to Prince Paxton. I mean, just
the Big Maple.
The Big Maple. A tremendous outing. After Detroit scored 19 runs, they were shut out. I think this is the first time since like Kansas City did it in like some doubleheader or something like that, something crazy like that. But I mean, the guy, 9 strikeouts, 1 walk, 4 hits. He was pretty much untouchable last night.
Yeah, and there's one pitcher in the majors who has 4 starts of 6 innings pitched and no runs allowed. And that is James Paxton. And to his credit, after the start against Oakland, he said he went back and watched video and saw a mechanical flaw in which the ball was getting out over the plate instead of inside to the hitter, corrected the flaw, and it was another beautiful start last night.
Yeah, even in that bad start against Oakland, where it wasn't even really bad. He was missing spots, as you were saying. Right. There was a mechanical issue.
The location
he did strike out 8 batters and walk 1.
Yeah, because he still had the movement. Yeah.
The James Paxton effect, the Big Maple, it was completely in control last night. Daniel Norris was not. He had 9 hits allowed, 4 runs, a couple of walks, 4 strikeouts. Threw 104 pitches in just 4 innings yesterday to Daniel Norris, who I expected a lot of big things from this year. Only 4 hits total for Detroit yesterday. For Seattle, hitting-wise, it was Nelly Cruz going deep for his 5th bomb of the year.
I don't have, you know what? I wanted to have Nelson Cruz on some teams this year. I don't have no place. Every time I did a mock draft, I got Nelson Cruz. But when I went hot, I never picked up Nelson Cruz. But Nelson Cruz's power is something that fantasy owners desire.
Kyle Seager remained out of the lineup. Taylor Motter started at 3rd again. He was 2-for-5. Here's the interesting note, though.
It's my guy.
It was Guillermo Heredia batting 2 yesterday with Mitch Haniger on the DL. Now, we wonder who would get in this 2 spot. And obviously, it worked for it worked very much for Haniger. Heredia was 2-for-5. He hit his second home run of the year. A couple of RBIs, a couple of runs scored. When we come back, I want to talk about if Heredia has fantasy value. 314 average, 351 OBP, batting in front of Cano and behind Segura. It's something I think we need to look at, and it's something I need to discuss with waivers coming this weekend. More baseball coming your way next here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Is not a name I knew until the season started.
Playing, I still don't know it.
Playing in the middle of the order for Seattle. A dude that was playing some outfield, 26 years old. Now, Mitch Haniger was a name everybody wanted to know. Now, to start the season, Heredia didn't play. In fact, he barely played. But he has played the last 5 games in a row for Seattle. And in that time, he's gone 7-4-21-ish, I think, I want to say. About that. My math's a little off here. 8-16. Yeah, I was right. 7-for-21 in that time. He's got a home run, a couple of ribbies here. Doesn't have the speed of a Haniger, but, Matt, is Guillermo Heredia someone we should know?
I mean, if he's going to be batting in the second hole in that lineup, because I've been a fan of this lineup. I know they struggled a little earlier. Everybody seems to be coming around. And when G. Segura is, I think he's in the right spot atop that lineup. So, I mean, he has to warrant some notice there. I honestly, I don't know that much about Heredia.
He's a contact hitter. He's going to give you no pop, no speed, but he'll help out in batting average.
Yeah, and I'm looking at, you know, what he did last year between AA and AAA. I mean, I don't have a big enough. I'd have to see a better scouting report on it. But everything you said sounds about right, Corey.
Yeah, what I'm reading is that he's a guy that he can help AL-only teams in batting average.
What I would have thought yesterday was a Motter would have been in the 2-hole.
Right.
That's my guy. They should have put him there.
Especially with the righty versus the lefty. You know, just, you know.
Obviously.
But if he's a contact hitter, you know, it's okay to have him in the number 2 hole.
Right.
Because you want to move the runner along. You want to have your number 2 hitter make contact. You know, he hasn't spent a lot of time in the minors. The scouting report that Corey read was pretty much accurate. But right now, he's only striking out 3.1% of the time. That's going to change. He's not going to hit 300, but this kid can hit 280. He's chasing more, and he's making better contact, but I don't know if that keeps up.
Well, I mean, how old, is he like 26 years old?
He's 26 years old. He's from Cuba.
So
36.
Oh, that's not nice. So when we talk about James Paxton, there's always another guy we talk about with James Paxton, and that's Lance McCullers, obviously. McCullers and Paxton went very near each other in drafts. They both were high risers. Everybody was high on both of them. Paxton pitched brilliantly last night. Lance McCullers did not. 5 innings, 7 hits, 5 runs, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. He was all over the place. Chris Stefanski did pitch well, of course. 2 strikeouts in his inning of work. Trevor Bauer for the Indians on the other side of this game. He didn't pitch great either. He did have 8 strikeouts, though. 6 hits, 4 runs allowed, 2 walks. And then eventually got the job done. Andrew Miller pitched a 7th in this one. Cody Allen came on for the 4-out save a little bit later on. Matt, I'm sure you were watching. What did you think of Lance McCullers?
Honestly, I didn't get to see the McCullers game. I was watching like pretty much on the app as I was doing some errands. And, you know, it was kind of disappointing because, you know, I have McCullers and Paxton on a lot of teams. So luckily Paxton saved the day later on. But I was hoping actually for a really big day. And, you know, I still think that McCullers is going to offer a lot of wonderful things ahead.
I think a lot of times with these young pitchers, especially like first full season, et cetera, you're going to see bumps, you're going to see ups and downs, et cetera. Actually, for Bauer, this really wasn't a good start against the Astros. Coming in against the Astros, 4-0 with a 1.93 ERA last night, but still, of course, the performance wasn't bad. You mentioned Allen coming in for the 4-out save. He's only got 4 saves so far, but you know, I'm really not concerned about him.
Okay, and Corey?
Well, it was Lance, I want to ask you about this guy.
Lance McCullers?
Lance McCullers, we know what we get from Lance McCullers. I like Paxton better, but we know Lance McCullers.
Okay.
I had a question, though. You heard about this kid, Hunter Green?
No.
You heard, anybody here heard about this kid, Hunter Green, this baseball?
The high school kid?
The high school kid, Hunter Green.
Yeah, he's getting all the hype. Did he stop pitching and stuff?
Joe, they said he's a combination of Noah Syndergaard and Alex Rodriguez.
Seems extreme.
Noah Rodriguez.
That's what it is. Yeah. Like, yo, he could throw 100 and he mashes it at the plate.
How old is he?
17 years old.
Is he eligible for the draft this year?
He'll be eligible for the draft.
So he'll be the first pick overall?
He'll be the first overall pick. His name is Hunter Green. They said like, yo, this is like, they was like, yo, baseball has never seen a prospect like this kid.
Lance Harper is a pretty good prospect.
That sounds amazing.
Who? Bryce Harper? Lance McCullers? Oh, no. Bryce Harper? Oh, yeah, Bryce Harper. We knew Bryce Harper when he was young, like LeBron.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to see the guy from Japan next year, Ohtani.
Yeah, that's Ohtani's really interesting.
That guy throws 100 and home runs.
Yeah, it's another Cuban kid, too, that's supposed to be real good, right? Yeah, I don't know what his name is. I heard it, in passing. They were like, yo, he's going to be a dude that, you know, I don't know how they work
now,
that
if
stuff.
Now, if you are a team that's interested in Ohtani, like, are you a National League team? Are you more interested?
I think every team's got to be interested.
Okay.
I mean, if I'm like a team like the Padres, I mean, but see, he's capped out. He's going to lose a lot of money if he comes next year. Because if he waits one more year after that, then he can make, you know, whatever. But he's going to get capped out next year. I mean, every team, I don't know how it's going to work, but every team is going to be in on this guy.
100%. Yesterday, in this Indians-Astros game, though, Carlos Santana was 2-for-4. Nice to see him. Have a nice day at the plate. Now he's got that average back at 253. The OBP's at 354. Kind of where you expect Carlos Santana to be. 2-for-4, 2-run score, Cole RBI. Big day for Michael Brantley, who continues to just mash at Modica. 2-for-4, 3 ribbies. You feel good for him.
21st round.
Yeah, you have to feel good for Brantley. I don't own Brantley. I just stayed away. I didn't want to deal with the shoulder issues. But that's been proven to be wrong.
So far, so good.
Just one quick thing. Cody Allen has like a 53.5 K percentage.
That's high. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
His first 13 outs this year, 11 were strikeouts.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Jason Kipnis is 2-for-4 last night. While Eddie Jose Ramirez, they each had a hit. For Houston last night, a 2-for-4 day from Yuli Gurriel.
He's on fire. The guy's like raised up. He raised his average.
He's not heating up. He's just scorching right now.
But you know what, though? Josh Reddick, like the night before, he had 2 spectacular catches in the outfield. Mm-hmm. Last night, 2 big errors in the outfield.
Just how baseball changes every day, right? Reddick was also 0-for-3 at the plate. Both catchers homered last night for Houston. 1 for Brian McCann, 1 for Evan Gattis.
We wish we could see that all the time. You know, we were wondering, you know, how these two guys were going to fit in the lineup together. And Gattis, that was just That was just a bomb to center field. That was all wrist action.
Now, I was somebody that was extremely concerned about Evan Gattis' playing time.
Yeah, me too. We had these discussions.
We certainly did. And, you know, as I look at how much he has played throughout the month of April, like, there was a time where basically he was only playing one or 2 days in a row, and they get a day off, and it's just like, oh my goodness. Now, he's played the last 4 days in a row, which is the most days in a row he has played all season. But I think this is still a concern, Scotty, the amount of playing time a guy like Evan Gattis is going to get.
I think it is, but, you know, if you're looking at using him as a catcher, right, a lot of times
it doesn't matter.
You don't expect a catcher to play every day, every week. And, you know, if they can get him in at DH like they did with McCandle, you know, they'll get his bat in the lineup, just like we were saying during the preseason. I mean, what catcher are really going to expect to play, you know, 6 days a week?
It's a good point. And you compare it to somebody like Wilson Contreras, who sits a lot for Miguel Montero. I think it's a good point.
I have Manny Pena and Jet Bandy as my starting two catchers in one league.
Both hitting really, really well right
both
now.
Both hitting really, really well and splitting playing time.
Yep. Speaking of some of these injuries, of course, we mentioned Eric Thames. I want to go to Washington, which I kind of mentioned earlier, where Cody Glover yesterday afternoon, it was announced, he's headed toward the disabled list because he's got a hip injury. So he injured it on this first pitch the other night where he let up a couple of runs in that seventh inning. And he says, listen, I'm fine. I'm going to be fine. It's going to be a 10-day thing. Matt, if you're a Cody Glover owner, what do you do?
I mean, if I'm in a 12-team league, I mean, if I need somebody or somebody has like a really good pitching performance saying you want to take a shot on that, I'm not just going to be holding on. If I need to make a move in a 12-team or less, he's definitely expendable.
He's done.
I have in the Greenwich Street Tavern League.
Right. Well, that's a 15-team league. That's different. Yeah. You know, that's different. Looking at a 12-team league, like, to me, a guy goes in the DL like Cody Glover, like, you don't even know if he's the closer. That's the annoying part, right? Like, when he gets off the DL, maybe it'll be Sean Kelly. I'll get to another closer in a second that I have similar questions about. But Glover's an interesting name. When you talk about DLs, right, if you have one spot for both Cody Glover and a guy like Tyson Ross, which one do you hold on to?
Tyson Ross, I'm not holding on to.
Okay. I agree with that. I'd rather hold on to Cody Glover because I think he will be back in a week. I think that even if he's not the closer, like, he'll give you some value.
Yeah, I just don't know what to expect. Even if Tyson Ross comes back. When he's coming back.
Again, you listen to this Chris Spire interview.
Yep.
And it's like I've talked about all week. Even a 12-teamer, I'm keeping Glover because it's going to be an audition process. Sean Kelly, throughout his career, has gotten hurt. He's had two Tommy John surgeries and a bunch of other injuries. I don't think they trust Kelly to go back-to-back, et cetera. This could end up being a two-closer deal for a long time.
Yeah, but, I mean, what if Glover's on the disabled list for more than 10 days?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying you have to cut him.
Well, right now,
he's not a guy that I have to hold.
Right now, I believe that, for the information I have, it's going to be 10 days. It's not going to be 60 from what I know.
Right.
So I'm not just going to throw a closer back on the free agent list.
The information that we were given on, say, like, Trey Turner was supposed to be 2 or 3 days. Then he went on the DL. I mean, I'm just here. Everybody says they're always going to be fine. That's what I'm always hearing. And you might be right. He might be back in 10 days.
But unless I actually hear that it's more than going to be 10 days,
They're not going to tell you that right out and say that. They never say bad things, usually. They always just say it's nothing.
No, they always tell you optimistic. It's like, they'll tell you Madison Bumgarner's out 2 to 4 weeks. What I'm saying is, unless I have the information, I can't cut him just based on fear.
I'm not based on fear. My point is, if somebody in a 12-team or less, if there's somebody out there that you really needed, I could see letting him go. I mean, in a 15-team league, no.
It depends on my situation. If I only have two closers and he's one of them, I'm not going to do it. If I only have three closers, one of them, I'm not going to do it.
I only have one closer.
Yeah, same.
David Robertson.
Yesterday for the Nats, five innings pitch.
Save a week.
5 innings pitch for Tanner Roark, 5 hits, couple of runs, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts. Tyler Chatwood for Colorado, 5 innings, 8 hits. 5 runs, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts there.
Do not start him at home. He's a road guy.
You know what? I asked these goons the other day down in the control room. I was helping them set my lineup for Tout Wars. And I asked, like, I was like, was you there, Matt? When I was figuring out who the pitcher to start, it was Bartolo, it was Hahn, and it was Trevor Bauer, right? And they was like, everybody, the consensus was I should bench Trevor Bauer.
Yeah, I would have said bench Trevor Bauer.
You read the Tout Wars decision by everybody in the control room?
Yes.
You should not say that on the air because if Ronis gets a hold of that, he's going to...
Ronis ain't going to do nothing. Yeah. He's not going to do nothing.
You're going to say you're getting help.
I don't care about Adam Ronis. He get help from me. I helped Adam Ronis more than anybody has.
We talk about the same Nationals every day, and we'll continue to do so when we get back. Trey Turner, Ryan Zimmerman, Bryce Harper. It's all the same every day, and it's never ending. And that's a good thing if you own members of the Washington Nationals. We'll talk about that and talk about Luis Severino's brilliant start next.
Oh, that's my guy.
It is Thursday, April 27th, 2017, back here on the Roto Experts, and, you know, talking about fantasy baseball and fantasy football. Corey, yes. Don't get it wrong that you, you know, that you didn't say that, you know, you want to get the guy to get hurt because, you know, they're playing audio.
I love your assessment, Scott. I love most of the impressions you do, Scott.
Let's not do any of that, okay? Yeah. None of that. No impressions. Nothing, okay? Let's just go through the box scores, and that's it.
Stick to the numbers, right,
Stick
Scott?
Stick to the numbers, yeah.
Greg's coming back now,
But you know
Scott.
What, though? We were talking about
Sorry,
the
Nationals. Sorry, I'm just trying to run a show here.
Yeah. The captain's back to steer the ship.
Talking about the Nationals, Trey Turner, he flirted with the cycle
again.
Last night. Again?
Yep.
Trey Turner is only the third in Nationals / Expos history of that franchise to have 6 extra base hits and 8 RBIs in one series.
Wow.
The others were Andre Dawson and
Cliff
Gary,
Floyd?
Andre Dawson and Gary Carter.
Cliff Floyd was here yesterday.
Was really? He yesterday?
When?
Huh? See, yesterday afternoon.
You didn't say. I was here yesterday afternoon.
Cliff Floyd got here around 7 o'clock yesterday.
That's yesterday evening.
That's evening.
Yeah, yesterday evening. I'm sorry. Cliff Floyd was here yesterday evening.
We didn't leave together?
Nah, we didn't leave together. That's why I thought you might have saw him, because you were still here.
Yeah, I thought we left together. I left around right the quarter to 7 yesterday.
Yeah, Cliff Floyd you probably just missed Cliff Floyd. Cliff Floyd was sitting right over there.
Oh, I said one thing.
What were you still doing here?
I wasn't here.
Oh.
I didn't know he was there.
I have a reliable source contacted me. Put it like this. Cliff Floyd sent me a message yesterday that he was here and that he was in the building.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But if Trey Turner played his home games at Coors Field, that would be something to watch.
He'd be better than Trevor.
That would be crazy.
He'd be better than Trevor Story.
Yeah, that ballpark is like tailor-made for him. The spacious outfield, those gaps. And, you know, he can hit the ball. He can have no problem hitting the ball over the fence. You know.
Interesting to hear, like, you know, the broadcast is talking about and saying he's one of the 3 fastest guys in Major League Baseball. Plus, he has the power, too.
I also love that he's batting the 2-hole, which makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before the season started.
Yep.
The reasons why. I mean,
yep.
You put him in front of Bryce Harper, you want this kid to see him fast.
100%. Yeah. Harper was 4-for-4 yesterday.
Harper got on base 5 times.
Crazy.
And Ryan Zimmerman, homer number 8.
Again.
And you can hear my interview with him on demand. It's like these mechanical changes that he made during the offseason.
Changed everything.
Worked wonders.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
Why? You want him to get injured too?
He'll probably do it on his own, coach. You don't got
to
say
it. I don't have to say it.
You're better than that.
He needs to slow down.
But that won't happen, Corey. These guys, they slump. Yeah, they have hot streaks.
But
slump.
I mean, Bryce Harper has a .548 OBP. That's pretty insane.
Yeah.
You think he does what he did last year? And like just falls off.
I think it was his shoulder. I mean, just from the StatCast data on his throws from right field, he lost like 10 miles an hour on his throws.
Oh, okay.
He did not look healthy. And since the beginning of spring training, he's been hitting the balls to all field. When he hits the ball left center, you know everything's going well for him. And he did it last night. This guy, when he's on his game, this is a future Hall of Famer.
You listen at an interview with Chris Spire on Audio Boom. He says the same thing that Matt's saying right now. It's all health. He was overcompensating for everything last year.
Matt could be the Nationals hitting coach.
He could be.
There you go.
He could be.
You're getting the same analysis, right?
Yeah, I could see him as the first to third base coach, right?
So
I can see it.
So,
all right, come on around. Stay.
So let me hear Matt working with Bryce Harper in the cage.
Okay, you be Bryce, though.
What's going on, coach? How's everything?
It's doing
doing good today. You know, it's like, you know, it's really warm out so I can show my guns.
Okay, very good. So what are we working on today?
Basically, you know, I want you to work on your hip turn right here. So, like, when you come out of the box, I need you to explode more into the ball.
Very good. What else should I be working on as far as my spray chart?
I was looking at Fangraphs this morning. And I see
what
that
time you get up.
I got up about 3 o'clock and started looking at your old swing rate.
Okay.
Yeah. I noticed it's gone up. You gotta need to stop chasing.
Oh, all right. Thanks. Thanks, coach. Greg about to throw up.
Moving along now. Well,
you didn't find that amusing, Greg?
Yeah.
A little bit. Louis Severino, what's up with him?
He's pretty damn good last night.
Kicking ass. This is classic Yankee baseball. Severino gives you 7, Betances, then Chapman comes in and closes the door.
Chapman didn't feel great last night. The velocity did not get all the way up there.
He got lucky. Rutledge almost, that ball just went a little foul.
You know what's very interesting about Severino going into last night? He had a very low strand rate. It was just over 62%. Actually, his FIP was higher than his ERA. That's how good he's been. The pitch selection hasn't changed a lot over the last 2 years, but like the slider is really working. He's doing a great job keeping the ball down.
I'll tell you what, is this another one of those Austin Romine things, Matt?
Hey, look, and when Gary Sanchez comes back, he's my
No, he doesn't want to pitch to him!
Well, no, but I'm saying, right now, this for Severino right now, he's just going so well. Why would you change anything? Have Sanchez, first off, have him DH, let him get his arm more healthy. I know he's throwing from like 120 feet or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's making his way back, and doing a progression. But if the Yankees don't win another game all season, and Severino has proven that he is a starting pitcher for them in the future. That is the biggest win for them. Nothing, in my opinion, compares to that. Because the Yankees have bats. I know people want to say Aaron Judge proving that he... We know Judge has power. And I think he'll be a hitter. Maybe he can even bat 230 this year and hit 30 home runs. I don't know. But I think the most important person is Severino, because the Yankees have so many good hitters in their farm system and no pitching. Their big guy is getting Tommy John. What's his name? Caprillion?
Yeah.
So this is a huge win right here.
And when you talk about the personal catcher thing, a lot of times that'll happen when a pitcher and a catcher don't get along and they don't like each other. There was a story in Philadelphia about how Jared Eichhoff and Cameron Rupp were not getting along. I heard in Chicago that Giovanni Soto and Carlos Rodon really didn't like each other. So I wonder how that's got to be. It's a communication.
Putting the sign down.
Thing, like that they're just not getting along. So maybe that won't happen.
You think he ever set him up? You think he ever said,
like Jorge Posada?
Yeah, you think he ever set him up like, oh, okay, you want to be an asshole? All right. He's coming high and tight. It's coming right down Broadway. Swing at this one.
I can only see that happening in like a 12-1 game in like the 8th.
Okay,
game.
Yeah.
You just want to like, you really just hate the guy. You got to like have total hatred for that guy.
Wow.
That'd be pretty tough. But I will say one thing. We're talking about catchers. A catcher to keep your eye on who is pretty much hitting his way up to the major leagues. And we've all been expecting this, and maybe he's Gary Sanchez light, is Jorge Alfaro of the Philadelphia Phillies.
Now, in my insider report on rotoexperts.com that's up now with the Phillies, I spoke to Matt Gelb, and he said he does not expect Alfaro up anytime soon. He's off to a slow start, and they're not going to rush him.
What did the coach say, though? Scott Gelb is the beat writer, right?
Every time
the coach ain't going to tell you the truth.
I'm not saying he's coming up this month, but after this Super 2 and stuff, he's going to be their backup catcher, and he's going to be getting in there.
He's got to start to hit, though. He hasn't hit yet.
You know what? Us fantasy analysts and fantasy owners, we need to start holding beat writers more accountable. Beat writers have given us some bad information over the past couple years. Don't get me wrong; they're doing the best they can.
We always haven't been right ourselves, though.
That's true too. Yes. You're right.
Jorge Alfaro is hitting .377. He's got 3 homers.
That's pretty good, Scott.
This kid's got power. He's got a cannon of an arm. The question is he going to be a good framer and stuff? But the kid can hit, and he's not coming up this month. I say anytime after June, he's at least a backup catcher, and then second half of the season.
What's more important to a baseball team? A catcher working with the pitching staff or the catcher's bat?
Well, I mean, you have to be able to handle the staff.
You got to be able to do both.
But I mean, if you can't handle the staff and your pitching's getting, you know, like we talked about Carlos Rodon last year, he had the most strikes called balls. That's
the catcher's fault.
Yes, I'll give you a good example. When Mike Piazza was a Met and a Dodger, people talked about he couldn't throw runners out. That was a problem.
All win championships.
Every pitching staff he worked with was really good. They loved him because he was a good handler of pitchers.
Yeah.
Because he worked with the staff so well. Hall of Fame bat, but also, like a lot of people don't talk about his handling of the staff.
Hall of Fame bat.
Hall of Famer?
He just got in.
No, he was overwhelming.
Who was overwhelming?
Piazza.
What do you mean?
What? He easily got in.
But he wasn't the first ballot guy.
No, but he easily got in when he was in. It's not like he had one person campaigning for him like Tony Romo.
Well, most people campaigned for Mike Piazza living Queens.
You're the only person who campaigned for Romo. Anybody who watched baseball knew Piazza was the greatest hitting catcher of all time.
Go ahead, Greg.
Wasn't the first ballot Hall of Famer, though.
What's that? No, he wasn't. But he was going to get in. It was inevitable.
I agree. Speaking of the Mets here, in that Mets game, there's a bit of an injury.
So, was that to a Met?
No, it's one of your players.
No, but there might be a Met injury.
Oh, that's right, Enciarte.
No, Phillips.
Brandon Phillips.
Yeah.
Oh, he's older.
He hurt his groin sliding into second base. Then he tried to next inning.
He hit his nuts on the back?
No. maturity. And then he came out the next inning, and he tried to play in the field, and he tweaked it on the throw again. And he had to come out. They're saying, the manager says it's not serious, and he's listed as day-to-day right now.
But one of the things that I felt concerning, I mean, look, Gesellman once again, for the season, he's got a 20 ERA in the first inning. The command is just not there. But after the game, I forget who the beat writer was. My apologies.
Probably Matt Gelb. Let the barbs be accurate. Gelb's the Phillies. I think you're making fun of me, making fun of you.
It is pretty.
Zeldin's slider was down in velocity. Terry Collins mentions he hopes after the game, he hoped that it's nothing that would be an injury-related thing. So
these right, right now, I'll tell you what. Everyone that called Gesellman the next Jake DeGrom, can you, like...
Calm down.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Let me ask you a question. Yes, I heard Gesellman, you know, say a lot of people making a lot of sleeper lists. Who called him the next Jake DeGrom? Well, I heard that.
There were people
who were calling Jacob DeGrom 2.0.
Yes.
Honestly, up until, like, I heard the stuff about with the velocity last night, I watched that first inning. Freddie Freeman, that pitch was close. He could have been called out.
Okay.
But he's got to do a better job. But up until last night, I've been encouraged. I think there's been the movement there. I'm just hoping there's not an injury now. Because the slider velocity ticked up last year, and that's what we all got excited about, too.
Exactly.
You were talking about the command. The first inning was not good, but he said he saw a mechanical flaw there, and he fixed it thereafter. But right now, you're playing daily. You're targeting pitchers against the Mets. Like I said, I liked Julio Teheran yesterday. After last night, he lifetime in 8 starts against the Mets, 5-1 with a 1.51 ERA. And during this 10 game, they've lost 9 of the last 10, Greg.
Yep.
They're averaging 2.08 runs during that span and have a minus 21 run differential.
It's hard to win when you don't score runs.
The Yankees have a nice win differential in the season.
Yankees are playing well.
Yeah. Plus 33 the rest of the American League.
A couple of more injuries here. In Oakland, Chamonix was not throwing hard last night. Usually gets up to like 95. He barely got to 90 last night. He left the game early. Frankie Montas came in. We were wondering who would lead the rotation for Sonny Gray. It looks like Manaea, left shoulder tightness. He's going to be the one. I have to imagine he goes on the DL.
Yeah, it's looking that way. You know, wondering, like, was Jesse Hahn going to get put out? But he's pitching too well.
Yes, he is. Now, for the Angels, Bud Norris picks up his third save of the season. Now, Cam Bedrosian has his groin injury. I still haven't heard one damn word about Cam Bedrosian.
I mean, I love Cam Bedrosian, and it seems like every time this guy has an opportunity to close, some injury happens to him.
I thought Cam Bedrosian was due to come back early next week.
Yes, they are all, and I believe some of the stuff I hear too, but a lot of, you know, I don't know. I'm not hearing anything.
Yeah.
It's kind of mysterious that he just went on it too out of nowhere.
So it, when Bedrosian comes back, like, is Mike Schoester just going to screw us all and just...
I don't think Budnor... I mean, I think...
Three for three with saves? He looked good?
I don't think he keeps the job.
We're talking about 3 for 3 for saves. Remember how we were talking yesterday how Tony Watson's good?
Right.
And I just did a little Tony Watson research. Tony Watson's not good. I tweeted out some stuff.
Oh, I read it.
And Tony Watson still looked good. We're lucky then. You got 7 saves.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to wrap up the Roto Experts in the Morning. Come up next with more baseball talk. It's the OGs and everybody we know how. Stick around. More Roto Experts coming your way next. A couple of minutes left here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. It was, oh, temperature's gone up again. This is absurd.
Well, let me throw one thing in here.
Please.
For the show.
Is it Tony Watson's
stats? Rangers.
Oh, let's go Rangers. There you go. Get it in there. Make sure you get it in there. Hey, the latest on Zach Britton. We're talking about closers that are hurt. Zach Britton, it looks like if he came out of the bullpen fine yesterday, which I believe he did, he'll pitch a rehab game tomorrow.
Yes.
And then in Bowie, Maryland, and then he should be back Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday's the target date that I originally saw early this week, yeah.
And there you go. Brad Brock with 2 innings last night, got a couple hits, but still has not allowed a run on the year. Dylan Bundy, 6 1/3, 4 hits, 2 runs, walked 2, and he struck out 3. Alex Cobb had 5 innings pitched, 8 hits, 3 runs, only 2 of them were earned. Erasmo pitched really well in 4 innings here after Alex Cobb. Just 2 hits allowed, struck out 3. Alex Colome takes his first loss of the year, Scotty.
And then you had that. Alex Cobb was part of that wild double throwing error play in which Flaherty scored from first base. Yep. And they had 2 runs there. And you look at Dylan Bundy, he's had a low strand rate. He's another guy whose FIP has been higher than his ERA.
And he's really done well with the hard hit percentage, keeping that very low. It was like 16% entering yesterday's game. I'm not really sure what it finished after, because I don't think Fangraphs has updated that one yet, but one thing I did notice is somebody did tweet that his velocity has been declining each start. I do want to look into that, but otherwise, I've been impressed.
Did you see that on a start-by-start basis somewhere?
Yeah, you could see pretty much, you could see everything. I mean, pretty much Fangraphs gives it to you. You could break it down on splits, you could break it down in game logs. Brooks Baseball is another good one too.
Right.
Check out.
Yeah, I haven't checked out Brooks Baseball.
The other injury that I mentioned toward the beginning of the show, it's worth mentioning again. It's Clayton Kershaw. Now, this was, it kind of snuck out late last night, that he's got a bit of a thigh injury. He had it wrapped in the clubhouse yesterday. Now, he ran in the outfield like he normally does, and he is still expected to start this on Sunday. But it is something to at least monitor. Kershaw, you know, dealing with something here.
Yeah, he took a liner off the leg the other
which
night.
Which you talked about.
Yeah.
Saying how pumped you were that it didn't affect him. Clearly, maybe it's just a bruise or something.
Yeah.
Hopefully nothing serious.
A nice deep massage, maybe.
As Corey Parson mentioned, that's all he needs is a deep massage.
Corey,
it depends,
on
though.
Something else, too.
if he's on a team ahead of him in the standings, he's hoping Kershaw goes on the 60-day DL.
What?
No, I'm saying Corey's probably wishing for an injury, depending on if the guy ahead of him in the standings has him or not.
Well, I mean, that ain't mean. I don't think Corey would do that. He's not a mean guy. He's
Corey's going to church on
right?
Sunday. He's going to ask for forgiveness.
He's going to church tonight. That's when the NFL draft begins. Day one. He'll have all your coverage tonight. But first, he's hosting the OG's Old School Fantasy, which is up next here with Matt Modica and George Kurtz. For Corey and Matt and Scott the King Angle, I am Greg Sussman. Thank you so much for listening to Little Experts in the Morning. Have a wonderful evening. Enjoy your afternoon. Enjoy the draft. See you tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Eastern, here on the Little Experts.